Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Trek Picard on Paramount Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 10, The Last Generation. It's the finale of Picard. Star Trek Picard, the finale of Picard as a character, maybe? Probably. Aaron, it's been, what, 30 plus years in the making? 35 years? How did this episode strike you?
I actually thought this was a pretty stuck landing. You know, I don't know that it's perfect. I don't know that this season's been perfect. Certainly the series has not been perfect, but I...
Sure.
You know, again, all I really wanted from these Star Trek Picards is see my old favorite heroes in kind of sort of the shape they were in, doing, saving the universe and themselves with quick thinking and affection for each other. And that's pretty much what this whole episode was. Again, I hope we're done with the Borg as like primary antagonist. If they want to like Jurati it up and have them as like uneasy allies, kind of like maybe the Klingons were in the Next Generation, that would be interesting. But like, they have so fucking bent the Borg out of any kind of shape that they were originally into. They're now literally space zombies that I hope that this is the conclusion of that as well. But yeah, I thought it was pretty fucking good. What about you?
Yeah, I guess when it comes to the Borg, all good things are destined to be overused until they suck. But you know, it didn't suck, definitely. I really enjoyed this episode. I think it is a fitting end to the Picard story. It's one that almost feels necessary, which is probably like one of the bigger compliments I could give this season. When they first started this show, I'm like, well, All Good Things was such a perfect ending to the Picard storyline. What could they possibly do with this that would make it any better, add to that, as opposed to just be more? And I think they got most of the way there for me. I think bringing Jack into this equation and the Borg back again kind of gave Picard another layer to his life that we could examine. And, you know, in All Good Things, right, he comes to appreciate just how much his crew has meant to him over the course of his career and his time with him. But in this, he comes to appreciate that there was still something missing there, right? And it, because he had devoted his entire life to his career, he had missed out on the sort of intangible emotional quality of, I guess, being a father here. And I found that pretty compelling for Picard as a character. There were two parts of his personality that he kind of like put at a distance, which was the emotional connection to his peers or his crewmates, and then any kind of romantic connection to anyone, right? I mean, he always pushed that away as much as he possibly could. So like, this felt pretty not necessary, but it did add something to his story. So I kind of think it worked. And like you said, this series was not always good. It was, in fact, at times pretty rotten. This last season has been a big step up from the first two, and I don't know if that is owed entirely to the old cast coming back, but a big part of it is definitely that nostalgia for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we previously talked about, there is a little bit of a shakeup amongst the main, you know, brain trust in the Star Trek...
Right.
At least that's what I saw reported. So I think that had a big deal. I think that, the cast coming back and giving a fuck, it's good to hear of like a big union like this where there's no like bent egos, there's no complaints about salary. So I don't know whether they're just all grateful to get something or Paramount took care of everybody sufficiently. But I will say this too, that like this is the one Star Trek crew that always has kind of like loved each other. Like the main bridge crew, all the named characters just love getting together on conventions and palling around. They're in each other's weddings, they go to each other's Christmas parties, and I felt like the last 5 minutes of this show they just set up a camera and had these people just improvising stuff and their characters, and I thought that was cute. But like, Yeah, and I think that when you said this is necessary, it's like, I don't know about that, because like I said, All Good Things was
totally
perfect unto itself. But, you know, the voyage of Picard didn't end there, and they introduced this fear, like this, they reintroduced this fear and this unprocessed trauma with the Borg. And I think one of the things that they did very successfully on this show is have Picard finally face that down and find something that was greater than himself to sacrifice for. If I go way back and I remove and think, does this all make sense? Like, can you as a father step into a room with a 25-year-old son that you didn't know existed 5 minutes ago, and he's kind of a brash, cocky asshole giving you shit, and you just like fall in love the way you do when they put some kind of squirming human larva in your hands in a hospital instantly? Yeah. Does that really work like that? Because like, that's what Picard posits. But shit, you know, after 10 episodes, they have kind of told the story that Picard is just as committed to Jack and loves him just as much as Beverly does, who's been with him his whole life. So if you go along with that, I think all these emotional beats work really well. And yeah, there's also like just everyone had like a little tiny moment of something, except for maybe Worf. I think Worf was the most underserved of the characters in the back half of the season.
Well, because they tried to give him his moment with Raffi, and nobody cares about Raffi. So.
Exactly. Exactly. But everybody else, like Data had the moment of like, you know, like Data's always been the guy who suggests helpful things, and we never really make, you know, he never really makes rash decisions or whatever, and he has to ask them to trust him, trust his gut. You know, Geordi got his girls back and they got unborgified and he's back at the museum. Like, everyone had this kind of little arc that they completed. Riker processed the trauma over losing his son, and him and Deanna are back to being the top tier red belted power couple that we always love them being.
And still 1 year later, I don't think have gone home to see their daughter. Riker's still hanging out on the bridge in a museum, so...
I think they're going to leave her at the feral poison rat rabbit world. I think, yeah, they're just like, you know what? We were better without kids.
She's got a pizza oven. She'll be fine.
Yeah, we lost one. There's a Romulan security apparatus installed in the house. She'll be fine. We'll just have a wine tour of the galaxy, of the Alpha Quadrant for a couple of years, and we'll come back and enroll her in Starfleet. She'll be fine.
Yeah, I think the stuff they did with the Iremotic syndrome ended up working for me, and ended up making me feel like I could buy the connection between him and Jack a lot more. If he hadn't passed on these traits, you know, to his son that he was so worried about himself, I think that wouldn't have quite have hit as hard. But because they did, you know, both the Borg thing and also his just kind of general detachment from people, as passing on both of those things to his son, I think that really served to connect them, or at least connect Picard to Jack.
Yeah, they might be hinting that there is some kind of subconscious connection, you know, between Picard and Jack the whole time because of their Borg hardware that ties them together. Just the way that Jack heard the Borg Queen his entire life. I wonder if they're actually suggesting that. I wish they'd come out and said it, but like, they're suggesting that the Jack has heard the call of the Borg Queen almost his entire life, and that's been countered by his mother's presence, his actual mother's presence. But I wonder if there was also something about Picard that was kind of like balancing that out too.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, no, this is really like literal light years beyond season one and two of Picard in terms like, you know, being satisfying, being fun, not getting in its own way, not being giga cringe. It's just really good. And it's been I want to talk about the Enterprise D. Some of the hero shots of that ship and early goings of this episode were just tasty.
Yeah.
Tasty. Yeah.
I found myself rewinding those scenes just to get a better look at it.
Yeah, because I don't think we've, even in the upscaled like stuff that you can get on Netflix and whatnot, and on Paramount Plus, this model has never been this detailed. You know, It's just
you can see like the bridge crew walking around inside of it as the camera flies by, right? Like,
yeah, that's something they did in the intro to TNG, you know, like the that's something with they threw ILM like $1 million to make 30 seconds of film and they came up. But this is like, yeah,
you for 8 years. Yeah,
it's so great. It just looks amazing. And it was doing like some really heroic actiony stuff, like that sequence where Beverly does the stray firing and Data is like doing Millennium Falcon into the Death Star 2 superstructure action. I mean, a lot of this is very derivative and homage-y to other great science fiction franchises, but that might have been intentional.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Star Trek is offering an olive branch, a snake leaf pipe towards the Star Wars fandom and being like, yeah, hey, you know, we can cooperate and share. We don't have to be hostile towards each other. Especially now that Star Wars has been brought low.
Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of homages. There's actually, I was reading some stuff about TNG, because naturally you have to go back and like compare the two, right? I was reading some stuff about it where they had a first kind of draft of this thing, and it took a long time to write that. They had a first draft of TNG's finale that included a lot of things that we saw in this season of Picard. Apparently, like, the idea of, like, stealing the Enterprise out of a museum was in that sequence, those timeline kind of things they were doing in All Good Things. And so was Picard coming back as Locutus of Borg and spending some time there. So, like, it felt to me like they were putting a bow on the entire series by, like, paying, you know, very subtle, very, very like an homage you wouldn't get unless you kind of did some research and looked at, okay, what were they going to do in the original finale? I thought that was pretty cool.
Did you see the after credit sequence?
The one with Q?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was, you have to go through a lot of poker.
Uh-huh.
To get to that. you have to go through a lot of overhead poker shot.
You're also going through the full TNG theme.
Yeah, which, unedited.
How could I not sit through that? It's beautiful.
It sounded great on my sound system in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that is, I mean, we have a potential Star Trek legacy future here with Jack Crusher and, you know, Geordi's kids on the bridge. And you got Seven and Raffi. I could see them interfacing with different original cast members as needed. I think that's and with a new Trial of Humanity put on just for the scion of Picard. It feels
unfair. It feels unfair to continue to test this family,
right,
for the fate of humanity.
Yeah, is there no one else in Starfleet? Is there no Andorian? That needs a test? Is there no Vulcan,
right?
Thiolian? Is there no, really? It's just humanity that needs our ass tested all the time. Okay.
And just Picard. Yeah. Just the Picard family. Yeah.
Just a fakey Frenchy British aspect of Federation needs to be interrogated in some manner.
But they did bring back Q, which was, you know, I guess surprising considering we all thought he was dead, but we think you know, small, linearly, like mortal beings.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
They don't elaborate on that.
Yeah, but that's always Q, right? This could be Q. Yeah. This could be the son of Q, honestly.
Sure.
What does
that
even mean? You know, that there's more than one Q that's a... I cannot believe how much this... I just can't believe how much, like, Strange New Worlds and this have completely turned me around on Star Trek's future.
Yeah.
They need the right people on top banging on the keyboards and writing the scripts and coming up with ideas. But there is still a lot of legs left in this franchise. And I would be glad to watch more of this, of the Enterprise G now.
Yeah.
Goddamn Captain Shelby finally gets her hands on an Enterprise and it gets out of the dry dock for 30 seconds and gets blown up by fireworks in the Borg. I don't know.
Yep.
But fuck that Enterprise F was designed for everyone to hate it so that no one has a problem when they rename the Titan the Enterprise G.
Yeah, might still have a problem, but we'll talk about it. We should probably get into the recap.
Yeah, probably. No, let's fuck it. No recap. We're just gonna, it's just vibes in this episode.
Yeah, we'll save that for the wrap up. That'll be the vibes episode.
We should probably do a recap, yeah.
Yeah.
Set Phasers to Ad. We'll be right back.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy, and strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our 4-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Captain on the bridge, welcome back to the podcast maneuver.
Okay, we start off with Earth being overthrown by the youths. President Chekhov, who I think might be voiced by Walter Koenig. It's tough to tell.
Ooh, he wasn't credited on the voice.
Oh, he's not? Okay, maybe not him then.
I thought this was representing kind of like the fusion of Chekhov's. You've got the old Chekhov. You've got the J.J. Abrams Chekhov. You know, obviously this is supposed to be from a long line of Chekhovs, from the original Pavel. This is Anton, and also gives like a nod of respect to the reprisal of that character with Anton Yelchin, and he was, you know, tragically struck down in his prime. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty cool. This is like the grandson of Pavel Chekhov, and he's the president.
He's the
president of the Federation.
Yeah, the whole Federation. I don't know. He's trying to defend Earth, but it's not looking good. The Enterprise detects a Borg signal near Jupiter that's controlling the fleet, and they head toward it. And when they arrive, they find a Borg transwarp conduit embedded in the gases of Jupiter. They listen to the signal it's sending, and they find that Jack is the one sending the signal. They decide we got to sever that connection no matter the cost.
Yeah, the Borg just chilling in the Great Red Spot. The hurricane that's been raging on Jupiter for hundreds of years. Last I read about the Great Spot, scientists think it might be dissipating. Did you see that?
Oh, finally.
I thought it would be interesting. I thought it was actually interesting that Star Trek Picard says, no, the Great Red Spot's going to be stable for another 300-400 years.
True. Yeah. We got to keep an eye on it.
Not sure if that's where you want your fragile zombie Borg palace to live in the solar system's most intense hurricane on its heavy, most crushing gravity planet that we have. But, you know, the Borg, they got their methods. They're inscrutable.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good place to hide if you can make it work.
As glorious as those model shots are, and I know they're not modeled, the CGI shots of the Enterprise D, they kind of went back to Star Trek bridge lighting. They turned like a third of the 2/3 of the lights off for a lot of these bridge sequences.
Oh no!
Yeah, I wasn't. We only got the full bright Enterprise like at the very end of last episode and towards the end of this one. But
I didn't notice. I was too focused on that shot of it against the backdrop of Jupiter, which was pretty amazing.
It was amazing. And you'll recall in the movies they did this too, where like even when they had the old set, they turned the lights on because they think that darker equals more cinematic.
Sure.
And like brightly lit looks more TV lighting, like flat TV lighting. But I'm sorry, the Enterprise looks like it was shot in a late 80s, early 90s drama type of way. And I don't mind it looking that way.
Yeah, same here. It's how I remember it.
Yeah.
I do wonder how they got this conduit in Jupiter. Like, did they plant it there a long time ago? Is this something new? How did they get into the system without them realizing it?
It's really hard to square, especially with the Borg Queen kind of rants and raves later on in the episode, where she's like, you did this, Picard. We were on the edge of space when your virus bomb hit us and we became necrotic and we had nothing to consume and no roads to go back home. And I'm like, well, then how did you build a transwarp conduit and get your zombie self here?
Yeah, I don't know.
And then I wondered, because there's the scene in The Best of Both Worlds where the Borg cube is advancing through the Sol system and they're like, it's broken through the Jupiter defense fleet, and you see it just cruise by the Borg cube cruise by Jupiter and like vaporize if there shoots a few photon torpedoes at it, vaporizes it, just keeps on moving. I wonder if you could surmise that the Borg put like a transwarp conduit right there,
maybe.
But then why the hell have they never used it? Why haven't they used a super highway to the Sol system? So, yeah, I don't know that it literally makes sense for this to be in Jupiter, but it's a cool concept and shot.
Battle of Wolf 359 is a lot different if 10,000 Borg cubes come through the Jupiter transwarp conduit, right?
Right. Yeah, it's a little different. Or the beginning of First Contact, for example.
But I don't know. It's there. We shouldn't question it too much.
It's funny, though, you mentioned Jupiter, because we're talking about, like, where do you think this Borg cube is? We're trying to think of, like, a nebula or something. No one would have said, oh, it's the red spot of Jupiter.
Yeah. No, it makes sense in retrospect. I was a little confused because Picard in this scene is like, take us in, Mr. LaForge. And he says, aye, aye, Captain. And then they show a shot of the Enterprise just sitting there for, like, 30 seconds. So what did Geordi do when he said aye aye Captain?
He like touched the forward maneuvering thrusters for like a millisecond, like you're trying to do the smallest jump you can in Super Mario Brothers, and the Enterprise's rear thrusters went psh, and it just
so they're traveling at
it's going forward 6 inches per second. Something like that.
Okay.
I thought the exact same thing, dude. I was like, take us in, and it's like already like amongst the spikes of the cube and like,
and
you're there.
Moving? Yeah. We did it.
Well, you know, Admiral Picard's lost a step or two. Some things got lost in the horrifying golem transformation.
So his crew is just kind of ignoring the orders they don't think are good?
They're processing what, you know, He's in the middle of the episode. Okay. He's going to say, "Hey, I'm not your captain anymore." And they're like, "Hey, way ahead of you, buddy. You've only been kind of on rails bumper captain this whole season."
I've really been listening to Riker the whole time. If he gives me an order, I'll do it.
Exactly.
Anyway, on the Titan, Seven and Rob here fighting their way to the bridge. They manage to take it and trap the Borg bridge crew in the transporter room. Seven's crew isn't the most highly qualified, though, and they try and figure out how to disconnect from the fleet formation signal. Boy, she's working with cooks. She's working with the dregs of the Titan's crew here, apparently.
Looking damn fine doing it, too. I haven't said anything all season, but permission to swoon over Jerry Ryan a little bit.
Sure. I think Voyager gave us all permission to swoon over Jerry Ryan for a bit.
She looks fucking great. Like, there's a, like, when she narrows her eyes and kind of sets her face and fires a phaser, it's impressive.
So I'm not the world's biggest Voyager fan, obviously, if you've been listening to this. I'm actually half excited. If it wasn't for Rafi, nothing against Michelle Hurd. She's fine. This character, though, ugh.
I think they're unfucking Rafi. I'll just put that out there. I think they're doing a lot of unfucking of Rafi in this.
All right. You'll have to explain that to me later in the episode. But
this previous season, she's been very deeply fucked.
Oh, yes.
They've unfucked her by the end of this. That's the explanation. Okay, that's
great. Perfect. I could actually go for maybe a series. I don't know how long of a series, but a series with the crew of the Titan here. Well, excuse me.
Yes.
Enterprise G.
Yes.
I think if they're setting up another show, I might be in for it because Seven is so good, and I've come to like Jack Crusher a lot and LeVar's kids.
And I always like Ed Spears, the guy that plays Jack Crusher. I've been a big fan of him since Downton Abbey, and I've seen him in a couple other things. I think he's a sturdy leading man. I don't know about the position they have him in, a special counselor to the captain, but yeah,
in the guest seat.
They could do some really cool things with that. I agree. I think a series set aboard the Enterprise G would really hit the spot, Jim.
Maybe. I see what you're doing there. I get it. All right, let's move on. Here's another crazy thing about this scene. They just, in passing... Let me preface this. I was watching Deep Space Nine the other day. And something came up that I had been thinking about for a while. I was thinking about, like, transporter technology and replicator technology and how they might interface better. Why is it that I need a replicator in my quarters? Why can't I just say, computer, Ractigino, piping hot, and have a centralized replicator transport that food, that drink, into my quarters?
Huh, that's interesting. It's like the mess hall in Harry Potter where the goblins are actually cooking the food in one location and they just magic it up to the tables.
Right over my head. No
idea.
Not
for long,
you
son of a bitch. We got someone commissioned a Harry Potter film. You're gonna start getting every one of these references.
All right. Yeah, sure. It's just exactly like that. Like, why don't they have a centralized hub for the replicators?
That's
just
a really good
big
question.
Replicator, and then transport it around.
Also, if I'm beaming a couple times a day, I want a routine where the ship scans my body for nutrients and energy levels. And if I haven't eaten in a couple hours, just top me off.
Yeah, put some food right in my stomach.
Put that glucose, get my glucose right, get my electrolytes right. And then. And then beam an inert mass of fiber into my belly so I feel full.
Mm-hmm.
I don't got time to eat. I don't want to. In fact, even if I haven't beamed, and I haven't eaten, I'd rather go to the transporter pad and have them do a site-to-site transport to my shift. Like, okay, go from there to the bridge, and now I've eaten. And they can take out a few things. I don't need to piss or shit. Ready to go. That's
sure.
efficiency.
I mean, that's a given.
That's efficiency.
Yeah, we've already talked about, you know, how they unload the latrines.
Wide dispersal.
Wide disperse those across the galaxy.
Yep.
Anyway, so all that is to say, I was thinking about that. And then in an episode of Deep Space Nine, they kind of do that. They modify a replicator to transport a bomb somewhere on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, those technologies are already kind of one and the same. And then here in this episode, they have, they've taken it one step further with phasers that can be used to transport people.
Yeah, you're piping the transporter signal through the phaser emitter. That's kind of wild.
That was wild. I think, again, I think it's cool. Everything they're doing with the ways they're playing with technology here, with the Borg genes being spliced
it is funny.
In.
I do feel like that's a lot like if you had a 21st century movie where you had like a Marine load a bunch of glass into their magazine and start laying fiber optic cable with the...
Okay, yeah.
You know, like an M4. Like, I don't know if that checks out there, but
you could maybe you know do what? It with a hot glue gun.
Just Michael Okuda, we're available to write the series technical manual for Picard.
Mm-hmm.
Host at baldmove.com if you're interested. I think we can really break bold new technical ground here.
I mean, I'll volunteer to write an entire Star Trek series called like Engineers or something. Where it's just a bunch of this. It's just a bunch of like in experimental Starfleet engineering headquarters, they will be doing all sorts of research. Let's say it's at the Daystrom Institute, right?
Okay.
And they're doing research on like, can we make phasers actually transport people?
Mm-hmm.
Can we splice in, food when we're in the replicators, that kind of thing? Shit, get the holodeck involved. Like you might be able to live an entire life during a transport. What if you could live 10 lifetimes during a single transport? You come out the other side of that transport, you suddenly know Kung Fu, right? You suddenly... I mean, holodeck technology has yet to be explored fully.
Yeah, flip a few bits when you're in the brain when you're beaming us, too. Just have us learn things. I want to read a novel every time I beam. I want to read a novel and eat and get all my exercise done. Might as well jiggle those muscle fibers, you know?
Yeah. Chicken up those tits. Let's do it.
Right. Exactly.
Anyway. Yeah. Why can't we transport people with phasers? I love it. Enterprise analyzes the Borg cube. Deanna says Jack is there, but he's totally consumed by the collective. The Enterprise then gets an invitation from the cube, and Picard says they have to locate the beacon. The only way to find it is to beam over to the cube. So Picard, Riker, Worf all volunteer to go, and that's cool. But when Data volunteers, they say, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. No, you're not coming with us.
You stand a bridge, nerd.
So I'm torn on this, right? Like, look how much of a badass he was in Star Trek First Contact against the Borg. He really could kick some ass.
He's always been.
Data's always assimilated.
Data's always been the best war. Like, no apologies to Worf. Data's always been the best warrior on board the Enterprise.
Like, this is very true.
He could literally rip Worf in half. Mm-hmm. Like bone tomahawk style by his ankles. So I thought the same thing. Like, Jesus, you're leaving. Like, maybe you take Worf and Data and you leave Riker to command the Enterprise. And then you got Geordi, the brilliant engineer. But I guess sure. Data's lightning fast reflexes came in handy at the end. Which that's
they
always
did,
some,
yeah.
You remember the episode where Picard has to get them out of some ancient energy sapping minefield, and he's able to do it by just piloting the Enterprise on thrusters, like one bit thing of impulse, and he just kind of glides around.
Mm-hmm.
It was always wild to me that Picard personally took the steering wheel when he has a positronic robot right beside him. Like, just put aside that the Enterprise computer can't do this better than anyone.
Right.
But I've seen this man when he's drunk off of some kind of blood toxin reassemble the ship's isolinear chip core in like 16
speed.
Seconds. Put this man behind the wheel, and this episode is a vindication of all those thoughts I had as a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it all worked out.
Like, super cool that the old man's taking the Cadillac out for a spin, but you also have this positronic Superman right beside you. So I don't know if you really cared about your ship's crew, your crew's survival.
No, they ended up putting everybody right where they needed to be, right? Or in writer's terms, like, they found something for everybody to do, I guess, that best fit their character. And, you know, Data might have gone over to the Borg ship and end up wearing Picard's skin. Who knows? Because that's right. Definitely a thing with Data.
Yeah, yeah. You blow on his wrist skin and he loses his mind for half a movie. But there's some kids listening. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, go watch First Contact. It's great.
Yeah, please. It's a great movie. I love Worf's continual sexual awkwardness where... He's like, I'll make it a threesome. And Riker's like, do you even hear yourself? I'm like, first of all, Riker complaining about the sexy talk. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's way out of character.
Should have been Beverly.
Yeah, or he should have just had a big grin on his face, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
The other thing about this is you can't all leave. You're on a starship being commanded by six people or whatever. Yeah,
it's already a skeleton crew.
It's beyond a skeleton crew. This is the decomposed. This is like what comes out of a crematorium,
right?
That's left over of a skeleton after it's been burned.
Or it's like, you know, the stuff that's like when they say, "Hey, we've identified mankind's missing link," and it's always like three teeth and a jaw. That's what kind of you're.
Yeah, you're on the missing link crew.
You're running the Piltdown Man crew, okay?
Right. And then half of them are going to go off gallivanting across the Borg ship here.
Right. And it turns out it's a chimpanzee and pig teeth. Oh my god. There's no this is no crew. There's no skeleton crew at all.
I was worried when Picard said it's been an honor serving with you all that this might be the last time Picard saw his crew. That he might not come back from this.
There were some chills moments. Like it's, you know, and it's this is very fucking, you know, it's but gentlemen, it's been an honor serving. Like, come on, we've seen this a million times, but Picard's saying it with these stakes. And also
in this final episode,
when I was at this point, I'm like, is it beyond the pale or is it beyond my imagining that they would like kill Worf or Deanna or Beverly or Picard? Like the whole time I was watching this, I'm like, are they, especially with the last generation, are they going to kill Picard?
I mean, they killed Captain Kirk. Why not?
Well, they froze his body in the Daystrom black site. But yeah,
sure.
I did want like it, that's that I felt like it gave me a little juice because I was a little afraid for most of the crew. I could see them killing off John. I could see John Franks be like, I don't want to do this. I love direct and all that stuff. But like I could have seen it happen with any of them. And I think it really worked.
Absolutely. Yeah. If there's ever a time where you were going to, you know, put the captain in danger, put these people in danger, this is it. Anybody could go here.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, I think this is the episode where Patrick Stewart finally stopped doing the doddering Picard so much.
Oh my god, he stepped up this episode, man.
And I'm like, I was like, I've seen him give, like, long, like, he was reading Shakespeare sonnets during the pandemic, and his voice sounded strong and all that. This has clearly been a performance he's been doing because, like, that shit just kind of melted away this episode, and this was visibly older, but, like, Picard.
Yeah, the commanding presence, the rigid person that he is comes back in this.
Yes.
I was blown away by Patrick Stewart this episode, and I'm glad because I hadn't seen that spark from him. Anyway, the threesome transports over to the cube and they find it eerily inactive, except for a bunch of cannibalized Borg. Beverly tells him that Jack is down a deck. Picard sends Riker and Worf to shut down the beacon as he goes to save Jack, and also tells Beverly, you did everything right. Again, I'm worried about Picard as he's telling people, like, you know, giving them final affirmations here.
No, for sure. I always think it's funny, any kind of science fiction show and numbers, Riker's like amazed at the lack of Borg. He's like, a cube this size should have thousands of Borg. Motherfucker, do you know how empty this ship would be if there was like thousands of Borg aboard a cube?
Yeah, look how big it is compared to Enterprise. Look how relatively empty Enterprise seems, and it has a crew of 1,000.
There's actually been a lot of videos where people like examined the interior space of the Enterprise and like juxtapose like 1,000 people living on board it, and it is like it's the equivalent of a ghost town.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I think the average density is like every 50 meters there'd be a person. It's like that's kind of insane. Whoa. But the Borg, you'd be even more so. You know, it's like
way more so. It's 100 times as big as the Enterprise easily.
Yes, yes. So I always think it's funny. It's like he should send millions at least, but they're like thousands. There should be thousands of Borg here. But it's like maybe they're afraid that they said millions. They'd be like, there's no way Picard and Riker, they'd ever be able to win. But like, dude, you're the one that made the 5 mile cube. Like,
true.
If you if you want a more surmountable villain, then don't build your cube so big.
Mm-hmm. Red alert. Here comes an ad break.
Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa. Starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role, and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis, Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film, as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeney a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeney. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeney finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeney a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeney a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to the podcast maneuver.
There's a moment here where they get onto the Borg cube and Picard's like, I know where the beacon is, or I know where Jack is. I know where that location is. And Riker's like, how could you possibly know? You're talking to Locutus of Borg, man.
It would have been hilarious. It'd been hilarious if Worf had looked at him and like, I can't believe Deanna chose you. Like, just like, just what a stupid fucking question that is. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wild.
How does he know? I don't know, Riker. How does he know?
Mm-hmm. And then Picard goes deeper into the Borg ship and he loses comms with the Enterprise. But he finds Jack, jacked into the Borg ship, completely Borgified, controlling the fleet. He also finds the Borg Queen, and she welcomes Picard home. I love this. This Borg Queen. That is one fucked up Borg Queen.
Yeah.
It looks great.
Yeah, this rotting, skeletal, ruined queen. Just like hovering over Jack like a spider with all these tubes coming off of her.
Mm-hmm. I
noticed,
machine than person at this point.
I noticed that they let Jack keep his hair. Apparently,
sure
when
did.
Ed is like, hey, we want to shave you. And he's like, no fucking way am I shaving to be a Borg. They're like, all right, we'll let you keep your attractive hair. And we'll go light on the zombie makeup on you, too.
Yeah.
Because they didn't do it. When Jeri Ryan showed up at 7 of 9, she looked full horrifying Borg. Bald, mottled necrotic skin. You know, they put their back into making her unattractive. They didn't do so much for Ed here.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if they did that for Picard or if he was just like bald enough that it didn't matter. Did they
shave? No, he definitely kept his hair fringe. You're right.
Okay. So maybe it's a Picard thing. Maybe it's like
that
family.
And his chest hair.
They just don't. Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah. So maybe that's part of the biological distinctiveness that they like to absorb.
Yeah, chest hair, and then occasionally very good wavy hair.
Yeah, yeah. If you got good hair, the Borg will keep you.
They're desperately looking for the species that can grow their own hair back.
It's like, we really need a species with some chest plumage. Mm-hmm. What do we got in our databanks? It's Earth. We similar to that Hansen family. They got the chest plumage. Let's go after them.
Mm-hmm. All right, the fleet is still hammering the space dock. Man, that space dock can really take a pounding.
Dude, you're not kidding. I was actually, if this is canon, I was shocked. Like, Earth's got to be this. Like, I can't conceive of a conventional Alpha Quadrant fleet ever taking it down, because you'd have to get through this giant Starfleet first and then hammer on it for hours to even get anywhere.
Yeah.
And
that was impressive.
I thought it was really cool, too, just like the intensity of the fire. Like, you see these phasers coming in from these grids of ships just, and just constant stream of photon torpedoes. It looked, and just, it's like the starbase was engulfed in fire, like literally explosions and plasma and stuff, but its shields are still holding. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, this has got to be the biggest, if not the biggest, then very close to it, the biggest battle I've seen, period, in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking Wolf 359 was big, but
there's been some big hairballs in Discovery, but also,
oh, I haven't been watching Discovery.
Yeah, I've just seen some clips of like some of the crazy space battles they got up to in that. But
yeah, we can do more with CG now. So
yeah, for sure. But it was impressive, and it made Stardock look like a real badass.
Yep. Anyway, so the Titan sees the Enterprise on sensors, and Seven realizes Picard is on their side. She and her crew figure out that the Borg are using line of sight propagation.
Bullshit.
Fleet control.
Bullshit. What
this
is that
is
even?
The most absurd thing Picard has done in three seasons. Line of sight. Are you fucking kidding me?
What does that even mean?
I wouldn't use line of sight on my TV remote.
What does that even mean, line of sight propagation?
It apparently means like IR shit. Like, if they can't see you, they can't control you.
But what is that like? So they can, they're. I'm trying to think of, like, so what's the control mechanism? The control mechanism is something being broadcast, right?
Well, it's apparently directional. It's literally, like, it's infrared light, I guess, that they're using to send these signals, because it's line of sight, implies directionality, too.
I don't know. There's this, like, I know you're not on TikTok, but there's this classic TikTok sound that I've never quite figured out where. It's like from some kind of, I think, a 70s info documentary about how missiles work. And it's like the missile knows at all time where it is because it keeps track of precisely where it isn't. And that's the only thing I could think of when I was watching his line of sight propagation. Like, so the Borg can't see you, and they're just like, ah, shit, we'd love to control that ship that we're still networked to, but we can't because we can't see it.
Yeah, absurd. Absolutely absurd. Anyway, Seven decides to take on the entire fleet and gives her crew a pep talk as they walk into certain death. They cloak, which I guess breaks the fucking telegraph wire that's sending the signals over to the Titan.
Right.
Alexander Graham Bell calls them up and says, "You're not misusing my technology, are you?" I don't know. I don't know what to say about this scene because I was so pissed off about the line of sight stuff.
I know. It doesn't make any. I will love to grab some of the writers and shoot them full of truth serum and ask them to, on a whiteboard, explain to me how line of sight propagation works and why
and
the Borg would use that technology.
This wasn't even a thing they had to force, right? Like, they want the Titan to be able to break free of the fleet. But Star Trek has so much technobabble and engineering loophole shit that they could have just said, well, let's figure out a way. And they talk about, you know, tachyons and neutrons and shit like that. And then next scene, they've solved it. They figured out a way to break free.
We're going to spark a subspace pulse. It's going to give us half a second of control, which will cloak and then raise our shields, and that'll keep the Borg. I don't know. But yeah, the point, Yeah.
Right, well, but we can't maintain this because we don't have enough power to fire the weapons and to maintain the field that's keeping the signal out, right? Like, a billion different ways you could have done this, and they chose line of sight.
Line of sight propagation.
Jesus. Jesus.
Maybe they've embraced the essential truth of Trek No Babble, which is it just doesn't matter. It's all going to be a bunch of words that you don't understand, so...
It's okay when I don't understand the words. That's true. I understand these words. And
like they said,
nonsense.
We're going to use smoke signals to communicate. Uh-huh. Like, what? In space?
Right. God, I don't even use that on my telephone in 2023. Come on. Anyway, Borg Queen tells the story of how she reconnected with Jack. She, you know, is gloating about, oh, he found me. And Picard offers himself in place of Jack, but she says, nah, the future of the Borg is evolution, not assimilation.
This also doesn't make any fucking sense.
Evolution versus assimilation?
Yeah. What? She's like, well, now we can reproduce for the first time. I'm like, you still reproduce. You reproduce like a virus.
Sure.
But like, what did you think you were doing when you're hijacking entire species? Also, we saw Borg babies in Best of Both Worlds.
Were those assimilated as babies, or were they?
Oh, that's
because I mean there is a fundamental difference, right? Like once the Borg assimilate every entity, every being in the entire known universe, what do? They start dying off. You know,
that's why I thought it was stupid that they don't reproduce. Like I always thought that maybe they do clone. That I don't think they literally like have sex, but like is in vitro. Insemination beyond the technology of the Borg?
Apparently. They've never assimilated a society that has
So once they assimilated
out.
Everything. But so they're... But I think... I did like the aspect of like the Borg Queen's like, we're no longer about assimilation. We are now about annihilation. This is not your old Borg cube look, which will ignore the presence of invaders until you threaten. Like their explicit goal is to wipe out on all non-Borg life from the galaxy.
Yeah, because they're self-sufficient now, right? They can they can propagate, as she calls it, but they can procreate.
Yeah.
Make more of themselves from themselves.
And again, I don't understand how the Borg Queen got here in Jupiter, but like the idea that like you had this Borg Queen leading an invasion fleet, and then she gets hit by this technovirus that just turns them all into like dying, decaying... And she crashes into Jupiter and she's just like all alone for the first time in her life. And like, that's clearly making her crazy. And then 20 years later, like she connects to a single being and like clings to it like a life preserver and makes that being dependent on her. And I honestly wish they'd elaborated on that more. That's such a cool concept. But like they wanted to preserve the surprise of the Borg for as long as possible. I feel like that maybe was a mistake in some of those middle episodes. They should have front loaded a little bit more hints so they could really delve into the codependency that I think they're trying to hint at here. But
I think
whatever.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, I would not call this season perfect, but certainly better.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is Worf phaser proof now? Because it felt like he took 6 or 7 phaser shots to the core. Like, the first one's kind of a glancing blow to his arm, and I thought, okay, well, he's going to be just wounded for the rest of the fight. But he took, he took several Borg phaser shots to his core, his torso.
Maybe he has some, like, transphasic armor.
I thought that might be where they're going because they kept on emphasizing that I'm just wearing Klingon leisure wear. Like I would like to see what a Klingon battle, you know, him going and dressed with like Federation battle armor or something. But
and it would have been kind of a piece with it, you know, the surprise of like Riker trying to pick up his blade later, like where you realize, oh shit, that thing is super heavy.
Right.
Yeah, like you're surprised by that. I don't know. I didn't notice him taking a ton of shots, but I was doing notes most of the time. So
gotcha.
This episode's gonna get real messy here for pretty much this until we get to the denouement. But like, I'm gonna try and recap and break at logical points. But stop me if you want to talk about something.
Sure.
Worf finds a central access node, and they alert the Enterprise to make ready to receive the beacon's coordinates. Of course, the Borg awakens when they... Whatever Borg are left here that haven't been cannibalized by the Queen. The Borg Queen, I guess, tells Picard that she wanted him to see humanity's future's end. She's talking some smack here.
Yeah, that tracks. That probably tracks.
I wonder what Q's doing this whole time. Is he just sitting back laughing, just watching these Picards? These crushers.
Next generation Picard failing the test with the Borg. I tell you.
The Titan is playing hit and cloak with the connected fleet. You see them like decloaking, firing, recloaking so they can't have their channel changed. Riker begins the beacon upload. All just very quick shots here. The Borg plan, okay, let's get to something meatier. The Borg plan is apparently, according to the Queen, to propagate themselves throughout the universe by reproducing. And the Borg on the Titan break out of the transporter room. And here's where we're starting to like intercut between everything. Worf and Riker are fighting the Borg. The cube inside of Jupiter fires at the Enterprise. Worf takes a shot to the shoulder. Riker has to use his hidden phaser to defend them. Titan takes another pass. They're getting weaker. Enterprise destroys the Borg antenna array, which I guess doesn't matter. Like, the beacon is still doing its thing. What is the antenna array
No,
for?
I think it destroyed the turret array, I think is what they said. That they're getting blown.
Well, why don't they destroy the antennas?
Because the beacon is what's actually... I don't know why this fucking Borg ship is festooned with antennas. Because it seems like the beacon bristling. Is the glowing thing in the middle, and that's what's actually powering everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I understood that she disabled the turrets on the Death Star trench, essentially. And I don't know. The thing is, I don't know why it's impressive, and I don't know... Because like she's like, now, Doctor, I didn't have time to fully bring the weapon systems online, so you're going to have to manually fire the weapons... And the Enterprise goes on this like low altitude bombing run where they're just ripping the Borg cube up, and everyone looks back at Beverly and she's like, a lot's happened in the last 20 years.
Sure, which makes sense. She's been in a lot of firefights and scrapes, based on what I've seen. Yeah,
I just feel like if you were the captain, let's say that the ship that she had was very small. Was like a gunboat, you know, like a brown water Vietnam era PT gunboat, whatever, for swift boat. If you went from that and then they put you on the gun deck of an Iowa class battleship, would you be able to like fire its all of its and not only that, but fire it to an impressive degree of accuracy that would amaze even a positronic android? I don't know, but
sure,
I like Crusher a lot, and it was a crowning moment of awesome for her, so we'll let her have it.
Yeah. I believe Worf could hit those shots. Why not?
Oh yeah, because he stood by that console for fucking a whole decade.
Yeah, yeah, he knows his way around Enterprise weapon system. But yeah, I guess Beverly, you know, she's got practice with weapons.
She practiced on the holodeck. That was her.
There
like,
you go.
She was always like, man, I'm technically like third in command of this ship. Mm-hmm. If I ever have to, and Wesley's dependent on me, I'm gonna be the world's greatest weapons officer.
Yeah. She was down there every day doing yoga, pounding and red, practicing weapons.
Doing yoga, pounding red and blue, and doing simulations against three Romulan warbirds, and she'd come out on top every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She beat the Kobayashi Maru like eight times.
The Kobayashi. I was trying to think of how I could smash up Beverly Crusher and Kobayashi Maru. Crusherabi Maru. I don't know.
Sure. Anyway, the Enterprise, destroys those antennas, and then they can't get to the beacon because it's buried too deep in the Borg cube. But Data's like, you know what? I think I can use my positronic gut to get us there. And he convinces the others to go with it.
It's also buried deep inside me, my positronic gut, and I'm going to use it to find the other.
This is the scene. What do you think about this blade? Worf is using being super heavy and also having it being like the Klingon version of a sword cane.
I think if Klingons are so badass that they can effortlessly wield a blade that like makes a physically powerful man like Riker, like Jesus Christ, this is a heavy. I feel like there's no way. I think about all the times I saw like Sisko, you know, double a hand overhand Federation chop these guys and just lay them to the deck. I'm like, how? And they're like swinging 60 pound swords with no problem. How in the hell are you doing that? But it's,
yeah,
it's kind of, I mean, I like the swords are fun. Like the idea that even in this, even in this life and death thing where the whole galaxy is at risk, that he's essentially fighting left-handed just because, you know, I'm a warrior and even, I mean, it's absurd, right?
It's fun for him.
It's, they've almost gone too far with Worf this season.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, Michael Dorn, can you not advocate for your character's dignity? You know, like, does he have
falling asleep?
Does he have to snore and drool on the bridge of the Enterprise? Come on. Come
it's
on.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I got to say, I do kind of love it. Yeah, it might have gone a little bit far, but I'll give him that.
That's like, because I remember like back in the 90s, there was all these like cringy reunion shows. Like they had a Knight Rider reunion show. They had a Dukes of Hazzard reunion show. And you'd be so excited to see. But then it's like they have to do, you know, they have to do the fan service. And the fan service can sometimes come across as like Jesus Christ. And like a few points in this episode, it got to kind of like Jesus Christ levels. But, you know. It's also funny. Like I said, swords are fun. The Fate of the Galaxy, that's funny. That's super funny.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I did feel like maybe they made the sword a little too heavy, but...
A little too heavy. What do you think about Deanna sensing joy from the Positronic?
I got to remember, he's a golem, right? He's not... Like, he is Positronic, I think, but he's also very close to human, so I don't know what Deanna can and can't sense, but
she's definitely seen that some species are harder to read for her than others.
Totally.
Which implies that there is something, this isn't a mystical power the Beta Zeds have. They have some kind of biology that allows them to pick up on the mental patterns and wavelengths of other, and you know, amongst Beta Zed, it's as easy as having a conversation, and others, it's more difficult.
Mm-hmm. And with Data, it was kind of impossible before. Right,
because he doesn't have any biological equipment. That's still true. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That's like, it's like, well, like a 21st century doctor can't hook Picard up to like an MRI and tell that he's a robot. So like, I don't know what
they've blurred
that
line considerably between positronic matrix and human mind.
Yeah.
And I don't know where to come down on that.
If they have old ass Brent Spiner still like Data style kicking ass, like how can his muscles be bigger and stronger than a regular sized human and yet still not be able to be detected in MRI?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
the muscle density, yeah.
Or like, can you run through a transporter? Can the transporters tell if he's a? I don't know about all this. I don't know about all this biological, technological, but whatever. Deanna senses joy from Data. Good mm-hmm. for both of them. I love that for them. Really funny part was when Data, like after he convinces everybody to trust his gut, he goes, "All right, here goes nothing." And Deanna's like, "What do you mean by nothing?"
Yeah.
Relax, meat sack.
We're gonna be fun too.
Relax, meat sack. We'll be fine.
I mean, Worf's out there having fun. Data's having fun.
Yeah.
These guys are less concerned about the fate of the galaxy, more concerned about the fate of their afternoon.
Keep it loose. Keep it loose.
Anyway, the space dock is destroyed and the planetary shields are down. The fleet targets every population center on the planet. Titan's cloaking device is destroyed by the youths. Picard tries to unpack Jack from the collective while the Queen warns him that will kill him. He's too far gone, just like Worf predicted.
This series has a very strong opinion of what happens when young people organize and take effective political action together. It's not good. It has to be put down immediately.
Yeah. to get that out of here. The youths are destroying the olds. We can't have that.
Beam them directly into jail. That's what they actually, that's what the old people actually do. The young people running amok. They'd beam them directly into prison.
Mm-hmm. So they can be dealt with. Yeah, the youths are headed to the bridge once again, and the fleet is locking on. Everything looks bad.
Not the youth.
Yep.
The youth have destroyed. Also, is space not canonically staffed entirely by fossils? They'd have a youth uprising on Stardock?
Yeah. I imagine Geordi's museum probably survived pretty well. There's probably a lot of old fogies there.
Yeah,
right?
You're not going to catch anybody under 25 in a space museum. But
nope.
What about tourists. Yeah, Stardock? You just you got to be 35 years or older to be a member of Stardock.
Yep.
No babies on Stardock. They don't have any family facilities. Get your children. No classrooms on Stardock.
Or maybe people just hadn't transported to the space dock. Maybe they all took shuttles up because it's just from Earth, right? It's just going into orbit. It's like, I don't know. It might be fun to take a shuttle up there.
Yeah, it's like taking a train, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
get to see the countryside.
Yeah, take things slow. It's been a while since I've seen the curvature of the Earth. I'll take a shuttle craft this time.
Atmospheric friction.
Yeah,
I mean, shit, you don't get that in a transporter.
Hell no. I want to experience turbulence, so I'm gonna take the shuttle up this time.
Mm-hmm. On a planet where they have transporters outside of the office to beam you back home
literally
after your shift is over. Yeah,
literally. Yeah.
I don't know, maybe they're not taking shuttles, but anyway, the Enterprise arrives at the beacon, but they realize that firing on it would destroy the cube along with everyone on board. Geordi tells Riker and Worf to prepare to beam up, but Riker can't leave Picard, and Worf decides, you know what, I'm going to stay with him too. Perhaps today is a good day. They do like three variations on that line in this single episode.
They do.
Like, I was worried we were going to survive today or whatever he says.
Yeah. And Worf throws a fine. It's a fine day to die with honor. Like, what?
Uh-huh. And a with honor? He's adding, yeah.
You're festooning. You're festooning your phrase, man.
Yeah, that really,
It's like Ozzy Osbourne when he
made me sad.
It's like Ozzy Osbourne when he gets up there and he forgets the lyrics to Crazy Train. Like, come on, man. Today's a good day to die.
Yeah, going off the rails on a Crazy Train with honor and fine. Fine.
Going off the rails on this fine train with honor. Then he bites a head off of a bat and everybody clapped. It's fine. It's fine. He's got the heavy sword. It's cool.
Yeah, I was a little saddened by the muddying of that phrase that they're doing because it's a classic phrase.
I was too. It's like you don't want them riffing on "May the Force be with you."
No.
May the energy that binds us together go along with you. No. Yeah. Boo.
May the Force accompany you on your journey.
Boo.
I don't know.
See, this is getting me out of my idiot glee comfort zone. I feel like I can feel the wet diaper. I need to be changed and burped. Stop fucking with my nappy time here.
This is the big dilemma of the episode. Do they kill their friends to save what I find hilariously is labeled as everyone else in the galaxy? And I get the implication.
Except
that,
for the
like,
Borg, because fuck
if
them.
If Earth falls, that everyone else is going to fall. I've never understood that. I don't know why the Vulcans and the Romulans and the Klingons can't put up any resistance to anything.
Yeah.
Because
we're the best. We're the best, and they all know it. And as soon as we get down, the Vulcans like, shit, they took out the humans? Oh, my God. They're the closest we have to a barbarian race. We're doomed. We're fucked. We're fucked. We're fucked.
We give up.
We only have sex every 7 years, guys. We are not ready to deal with the full-scale Borg invasion, okay? Just fold up. Fold up shop.
Pon far from prepared to deal with this.
They are. They're so pon far away from dealing.
Anyway, yeah, Deanna, is it Beverly or Deanna? I can't remember, that says if we wait, like if we fire, we kill our friends. If we wait, it's everyone else in the galaxy.
It's Deanna. Because Bev is kind of like quietly losing her shit at the weapon. Because she is going to be her hands that fire the weapons. Which
and
I thought was a
that.
Nice touch. Yeah.
Here in a couple scenes, it's kind of amazing. Yeah, so Picard decides to jack himself into the Collective to try and save Jack. Inside the Collective, Jack describes it as where he belongs and describes his home. Picard tells him that he's always felt something was missing from his life until he met Jack. And we get some... is this where we get the scenes from their history? That's later. That's later.
Yeah, when they do the Care Bear stare or whatever.
Is this the first time we've seen inside the Collective, like what it looks and feels like to be inside?
I think so. Although, like, Picard always made it seem scarier, but this is like envisioning being in the Borg Collective like a heroin trip. Like, mm-hmm. you just feel safe and warm and fuzzy. And Picard even makes that, you know, like, that, no, it's not real. It's death, you know. But, it makes sense that the Borg could manipulate a being's pleasure centers to make the Borg, being a Borg experience, be whatever it they want it to be, right?
Sure. It could be death from a certain point of view, right? Like, the death of the individual, because sure. you're now part of this collective, and Picard values the individuality of everyone, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting to see inside that and to hear the way that Jack described it.
Yeah, it's like that he's got this community, that he's surrounded and loved and carried. It's where mm-hmm. he belongs. And Picard's trying to, you know, say, no, that's a massive cope for, you know, a lifetime of emptiness that you haven't filled. It is like, I don't know if I was like, it's taking a strong stance about being child free here. Where, like, Picard's like, sure. even yeah. me, with a lifetime of accomplishment and good, solid friends that have my back at every app and diverse, I got different species, mm-hmm. different forms of life as my friend. I got this rich experience. But honestly, Jack, it didn't mean shit until I met you as my son. Like, holy
look at how many times I've saved the galaxy.
Right. But it didn't mean nothing compared to giving my boy a hug. Like, wow.
Yeah. As somebody without kids, I find that a little bit silly, but
that's why I was
not
trying
a father,
like...
so how can I compare, right?
you know, it has its moments, right?
Oh, I bet. I bet it has its moments.
But I wouldn't like, say my life meant nothing.
When your child tries to take over the galaxy and you can bring them back from the brink, yeah, that's a hell of a moment.
Sure.
I do like that Picard relates it to his own life. This is what I was getting at with like our preamble here. I kind of like what this has done for Picard's character. This is something that, you know, it didn't necessarily feel like Picard was missing, but when you add this, it feels like natural that it could be something he was missing before.
Yeah, I've done all my bitching. I've done all my bitching about that. I don't like the fact that, because I grew up admiring Picard as a positive role model, and I thought he was a very composed, intelligent, articulate, mm-hmm. Caring, sensitive, educated person. And Picard has revealed him to be a broken shell of a man who's white-knuckled his entire existence, feeling insecure and paranoid and lonely. And like, I'm trying to think if like I have come around on liking that, because I think this Picard is a better role model for our times. The fact that, like, you know, like what they get with Data at the end of this episode, that like being a human is fucking scary and weird. And maybe we can all admit to like not being as command and control of it as we'd like to be. And not have this giant front that like we're all in control, and all these little voices of self-doubt being like, oh, I'm the only one that doesn't have their shit figured out. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But it is definitely, this is a definitely 2023 Picard.
Yeah, no, I like it. I didn't know I was missing this, but now that I see it, I'm like, yeah, I guess I could have been missing this. Geordi gives the order to destroy the beacon, and Beverly obliges. Beverly has to push that button, like you said. That's a... Man, I love the way LeVar delivers that line. The weight... The emotional way with which he delivers that line is crushing.
Well, he knows he's competing with Jonathan Frakes, Mr. Worf. What does he say? Mr. Worf, prepare to fire, or fire the main deflector. I forget what he says at the end of Best of Both Worlds Part 1.
I don't remember.
You know, one of the mother of all cliffhangers. He's competing with that momentous kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, And he rose to the occasion. Honestly, everybody's been good, but I thought LeVar has in particular been a revelation. They never really did much with him in the movies, because like getting the visor off his face honestly does so much for his acting. And yeah. He's never been more than just like a bit player in the movies, but like he's really gotten a chance to shine being in command of the Enterprise. I thought he did a lot of really good work. Well done.
Yeah, seeing his eyes welling up with tears as he gives this order to kill his, you know, multi-decade long friendship here. Yeah, with the visor on his face, that wouldn't have been the same. I would have heard it in his voice, but seeing it in his eyes is another thing.
Those cobalt blue digital eyes are just so striking.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. They look just like I can't tear my eyes off of him anytime he's talking. He's just like fascinating to look at.
I do wish they had more history with Jack and Picard to flash back to in this scene, because they're flashing back to things that happened like a week ago. Like you said, it's pretty fast and furious trying to connect these two.
They got a montage of their 72 hours of positive experience, which lasts about 3 seconds. And,
yep. Cause otherwise they would have just played back the entirety of the,
I also think scenes. That they did an underhanded trick where they went and refilmed. Like, I don't remember Picard and Jack laughing as much as they did.
Shields up. Here come the ads.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to the podcast maneuver.
Like, I think they used some outtakes or maybe even filmed like, okay, this Tin Ford simulation where you're all about to die. Well, and now let's just do some fun takes. Let's do give them some bunny ears. Like, they're doing that kind of like pickup footage because they knew they would need it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't remember it being very joyous either, but there might have been a smile.
But
or
Picard's
two.
Unconditional. And the other thing is Picard's offering to, because I think at some level Picard knows that that he's going to die if he stays, and Jack will too. But he says, you know, like if you don't want to leave, if you want to be left, then fine, I'll stay here with you. That's very. I thought that was touching and moving, because this is also Picard's worst nightmare. Like the rest of his life, I mean, maybe his friends fail and he just stays Locutus's Borg for the rest of it. We know what a waking nightmare he considers that. So, But that unconditional fatherly love literally saves Jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't really like recap it, but the beacon's destroyed. The Enterprise flies out through the Borg ship trying to beam up everybody. Anyway, inside of the collective, Picard tells Jack he's going to stay with him till the end, like you said. Jack then is inspired to break out of the collective. He unjacks himself and Picard as well. Riker says a telepathic goodbye to Deanna, which lets her pinpoint his location, which I thought was pretty nice. And then the Queen curses Jack, telling him he'll always be broken and alone. And Jack says, I'm not alone, as the Enterprise flies in and beams them all aboard.
Yeah, revealing the Queen to be this controlling, emotionally abusive, because that's how she's keeping Jack in. Like, you know, without me, you're nothing. This has been a real theme throughout all the Picard seasons, honestly.
Yeah.
Worf is here saying
one final, today is a good day to die with honor. Fine, let's do it. You just can't take him anywhere without dying with him expecting to die with honor.
Uh-huh.
Take him to the carnival. He gets on the teacups. Today is a good day to die with honor. Fine.
Right. You've seen the safety records of these county level fairs. Today is a good day. Mm-hmm. I also really like how kind of love solves everything. Like Picard's fatherly love saves Jack. Riker's mm-hmm. love for Deanna and his family allows her to sense him, like burns through the interference and allows her to detect him and home in on his emotion. I thought that was fucking pretty cool. And
can we rephrase it as Riker's love for Deanna and his son? Because I honestly don't remember him mentioning his daughter a single time.
One time when he explained their absence, he's like, oh, Deanna and her are back on this blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he remembers he has a daughter, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't think about her regularly.
No,
at
he
all.
Doesn't. He's like, Deanna, me and the kid we love will be waiting for you on the other side.
Right. No mention of his daughter whatsoever. That's insane.
Yeah.
What happened in that writer's room?
I don't know. These are the old school Star Trek fans, and they hate Picard season one too. So they're just like, fuck it.
Yeah. I guess.
I don't know how this works. I don't know how they're breathing and walking around in open space.
Right.
In a damaged Borg cube. But it was a cool shot to see the Enterprise D just swoop overhead. It's massive, like a mother hen telling a coyote to never speak to me and my chicks again, and just beams everybody off and leaves the Borg Queen to die in anguish.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny because, like, fuck the Borg. Sometimes even in the Next Generation, they played with the idea that, like, you know, the Borg are kind of victims too and all that. But like, you've got everyone from Data to, I think, the audience perspective, like, literally saying fuck the Borg. You know, we've had enough
good,
of their bullshit.
Good. Look, at a point, tolerance becomes too much. You have to deal with a threat.
It's true.
And the Borg are a proven threat time and time again. They will not stop until they've assimilated everything in the known universe.
Yeah.
You got to put that threat down. You have to.
The Borg is a good test case for the paradox of intolerance.
Yes.
Because if you if you tolerate them, everyone will be Borg, and then there will be no more things to tolerate.
Everyone will be intolerant. Yeah. So I'm glad. Get to that point. Let's just skip all this navel gazing about can we convert the Borg? Can we make them good? Yeah, you can save individuals, but the Borg as a species
they're evil by definition.
Yeah, they're evil.
Yeah. They're incompatible with free life. I thought the Enterprise tearing itself out of the exploding Borg cube like a bat out of hell, like its shields flaring and it's dragging this big ball of plasma at like at full impulse speed. That was a really cool shot. All the youngs deborgify automatically. They log off Twitter. They realize that their parents were right the entire time about economics, human sexuality, drug use. And they're ready to fall in line. They're ready to be mm-hmm. the good sons and daughters that their parents know they can be.
Yep. That's all it takes.
You can't take the CBS out of the show sometimes. You can't take the old folks out of the series, it turns out. You can call it Paramount Plus, but we all know where it spawned from.
Yeah.
The olds.
The youths revert back to themselves. The slightly Borgified Jack is reunited with his mom. He's still got the face implants. That's going to take some
plastic
surgery.
For one scene, he's going to lose that shit as fast as they can because they got Tiger Beat
magazines
to sell, I guess.
he's got the head of Starfleet Medical as his mom.
True.
So
if anyone,
he'd probably get that surgery immediately.
She's got like a flat blade screwdriver. She's just taking it off. You know.
Off, yeah.
Uh-huh. Like you pop it off like the vit cover of an 85 Honda Accord. You know, just
sure
pops off.
Sometimes it pops off on its own. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Will is reunited with Deanna, Geordi with Data and Worf and his kids via the view screen. And Worf falls asleep on the bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. The reunions are nice. Beverly's got mm-hmm. Jack. Will's got Deanna. Data's got Geordi. Worf's got Geordi, too. And then he just promptly falls asleep. Again, maybe give Worf a bit more dignity than this.
Yeah. Somebody's got to be the butt of the joke.
He should just, what's too much? What if he just farted? He's in the middle of his honk shoe. And then Geordi's like, looks at him, and then Data like wafts, like his smell. Like, where's the line, Jim? Right. Apparently.
And then he slides out of his seat and crumbles into a pile on the floor and nobody wakes up.
Shits himself. Like, where is
himself so hard he slides across the bridge carpet. Yeah.
Why can't he just sit there with his friends in quiet dignity? You know, he's been the laughing stock the whole fucking, he doesn't understand human idioms the whole fucking season.
So it took my second watch to realize what was actually happening here, because I thought he was meditating. I thought this was like his, you know, tea drinking, yoga doing, meditating
he's
self.
He's passed the fuck out.
But yeah, he's snoring. He's passed out. That's wild.
Hefting that 40-pound sword takes it out of you.
That'll do it, for sure. Anyway, Riker recites a captain's log. Stardate 1, he declares it. He's starting a new calendar.
Oh, wow.
His captain's log says the transporter is being used to reverse all the Borg infection. Admiral Crusher is now the head of Starfleet Medical, and she is scanning for all the embedded changelings in Starfleet.
Yeah. Transporter. She's finally found something more effective than the red and the blue. Just beam shit through and sort them out. All the shit, sort them out.
Her and O'Brien should have got together decades ago, man.
Oh my
god.
And
figured this shit out.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Crusher O'Brien Teleportation Services.
Mm-hmm.
COTS.
Also, there's another detail here. The changelings decided not to kill the people that they had impersonated, just to kind of keep them in storage for information.
Well,
purposes.
Because they might need. I thought that was actually plausible. That's like because they had to continue collecting data to fool people. They decided for these high-ranking people that they would capture them rather than kill them.
Sure, it makes a certain amount of sense, but it's also very convenient to the like big happy ending. Everybody gets to live, kind of thing.
The weird thing is like they play this like Tuvok and Seven are as important to each other as like Riker and Picard are.
Sure.
They served on the same ship for years in the Delta Quadrant, but you would never know that if you had never seen the shows just by this thing. Like Tuvok
is
ice cold.
Game. They don't get
there's
any toasts.
On a personal matter, I would like to address how much that I've always loved you. Like, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, Tuvok is just a dude. I thought that was wild.
He's just there to be Tuvok, which, yeah, I don't know. If I were a Voyager fan, I might be insulted, but
And maybe that's the thing. Maybe they just always had this, like, icy, completely by-the-book relationship because that was kind of their shtick. Because I know that Seven is always annoyed by the humanity of her crewmates, excessive mm-hmm. humanity of her crewmates, and... Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sure that had to change over the course of...
You would think, because that's character development,
seasons.
Right?
Right. I mean, the Vulcans are there to become more human. That is their whole point.
Yeah. They're doubling down on Shaw being dead, though. If they, you know... I still think they can resurrect him pretty easy, but...
Uh-huh.
I was hoping to hear that, like, maybe they, because, like, yeah, if they wanted to do something last minute to recognize how popular Shaw was with the fan base, they could at least get Jonathan Frakes in a voice booth and have him redo that captain's log so that he could say that. And turns out we actually dug Shaw out of the wreckage of the Titan when we refurbished it or whatever. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But nah, he's dead. That sucks.
Yeah.
Easily the most successful new character in Picard introduced.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's between him and Rafi.
Or the Romulan war kid, or the positronic girl. I don't remember any. Elnor.
Yeah, anybody who's left in this final season. But yes, yes.
Elnor and Lala, or whatever the fuck her name is.
Elnor and Soji. Soji? Soji.
Also, do you not recall that Picard started this season madly in love with his Romulan?
Dude, Laris gets nothing at the end of this. Absolutely nothing. He doesn't go home to the vineyard. He's
no. Yeah. Get fucked, Laris.
Uh-huh. What the hell? What the hell, man?
I don't know.
I mean, they forsook Laris because
they didn't.
The Enterprise D, right?
I guess they didn't. They didn't put him and Beverly back together. I thought it'd be a great scene if like him and Beverly and Laris were on a shuttlecraft to like take, you know, because she's like the stepmom, I guess. But no, Laris just doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can assume he's going to go back to the vineyard, but
she was there to give him permission to be awesome. At the beginning of the series. You're not too old, John Luke. Go off. I'll be waiting for you on Romulan, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Or wherever I'm going. Romulan's destroyed, I think. But
we worried about, like, oh, what's going to happen? Are they getting a full pardon? I guess saving the entirety of the Federation earns you a full pardon.
It does the trick every single time. Sense. Every single time. It's a Star Trek IV president.
Here's the other thing. You talked about things that might be incompatible with freedom. With liberty, with life, in a just society. I think denying somebody's resignation is one of those things that are incompatible with a free life. I don't know how, like, I get that this is just,
it's,
you know, tongue in cheek.
Right.
Right. This is Tuvok telling a joke, a Vulcan joke. But, like, the concept of denying someone's resignation just strikes me as very offensive.
Yeah, but like Starfleet is a military organization, and that's the one place of society where that's kind of seen as acceptable. Like, once you sign on the line for Uncle Sam or Uncle
you're doing
Tuvok,
your whole stint.
You can't just decide in the middle of battle, you know what, this actually sucks a lot more than I thought it would. Peace. You know, like you're kind of there, but
saving the entire galaxy, the entire Federation does not earn her. It earns everybody a full pardon, but not her the ability
I thought it made Seven look kind of stupid. That she's like, oh, but maybe she's like with Starfleet, like, well, oh, they're going to need some scapegoat, and I'm the one.
Sure,
that...
and she thought Shaw hated her, all that. So
right, yeah,
it makes sense. Tuvok gives her the officer review, which is a recommendation to be promoted, and he denies her resignation and gives her the Titan.
It's wild that Shaw was sticking to the Annika Hansen stuff, even though in his private log he had already started calling her Seven of Nine.
Yeah,
like he just didn't want to give her the satisfaction of knowing that he had changed his entire opinion about her. What a dick!
I guess he's trying to keep his crew in line, but it seems real dickish.
I mean, that's not in Shaw's character.
Totally. Yeah, he seemed like kind of an asshole most of the time. Anyway, Rafi gets a message from her son inviting her to meet her granddaughter. Somehow her name got out there in the world as being a hero, even though she was doing all this covertly. Worf wonders who could possibly have leaked that information. And they tell each other to never change.
Yeah.
Right.
Be a warrior for peace. This
Rafi
is what I mean.
Every single classified recommendation. Every single one. Also, I think warranted.
This is what I mean. Like, this season has completely unfucked Rafi. Met Rafi. She's a drug addict. Her family had turned against her. She is obsessed with this Romulan plot. She couldn't keep a stable relationship. And we leave her. She's faced her drug addiction and kicked it, even having to use in the line of duty. She was completely vindicated about her Romulan paranoia. She saved the galaxy with the full knowledge of her family, which loves her now. And she is, this is the most problematic aspect. She's the first officer in a starship with her girlfriend / wife.
Oh,
I don't
know.
Right.
I didn't even think about
that.
I don't know
how that works. Like, I'm trying to think of how the next generation would play out if Riker and Picard were married.
Uh-huh. Trying to think of scenarios where that's even been close to true. I mean, certainly crew have had relationships, right? But like, not that kind of relationship. Not in those positions.
But even like Riker, Picard had that conversation about Troy. He's like, is this going to be a problem? Like, oh, it's all in the past. We're all fine. Like, it's not in the past. We're just like, yeah. What happens if they split up?
Hopefully they're professional enough to deal with that.
What happens when
Rafi's professional. We know Rafi. She's highly professional. Nothing would ever cause her to go off.
She's gonna start calling. She's gonna start calling 7SN.
I think it's hilarious. That
that's the other thing. They also unfucked her. She has not said jail this entire season.
Oh, that's true.
That's the last fucked up thing about her. So done.
She hasn't spent much time with him. She hasn't had much opportunity to say JL.
And she never will from here on out.
That's true.
And like I said, I like Michelle Hurd as an actress. I think she'll be a very capable Starfleet officer. They stopped just making her do stupid un-Starfleet shit.
Well, until she's reading like space Reddit and comes across another conspiracy theory, and then she's off gallivanting across the galaxy again, like hijacking the Titan to go investigate like some pizza joint somewhere.
By captain's orders, r/conspiracy is banned aboard the USS Enterprise.
I think that's gonna stop her. Come on,
she should have an alternate account.
Yeah, she's got a line of sight connection directly to the Federation.
She should have a new username, not Rafi. Not Rafi 6969. throwaway Enterprise account.
That's all I could think, though, when she's like watching this message from her granddaughter. I'm just thinking she's going to bounce as soon as she gets wind of anything weird. She's gone.
Yeah,
she's gone. That's what she does.
Oh, well, we'll see. Hopefully they got a good ship's counselor.
Worf has never wept, which I found interesting.
It's funny.
And Deanna, we're still
this
like
is a
current.
Little Return of the King. There's like 17 endings to this fucker.
So Deanna talks Data through the emotions he's feeling now as a new human in an overly long therapy session. This is a bad therapy session.
It really is.
They make Deanna look like a bad therapist every opportunity they get.
Look, Deanna, enforce your boundaries, your time boundaries, or don't. But what you can't do is half pay attention to your patient and plan your vacation while he's droning on about the existential dread of being a human.
Yeah. Yeah, that's rough.
I love them. He's like, I just saw an incident the other day feeding their cat, and I just wept. It's just so beautiful.
Like, in a spot.
It's really, it's cute.
Being human is infinitely more complex than the desire to be human. Tell me about it.
And then the cherry on the shitty sundae top is when her husband comes home and they start discussing the condition of their fellow crew member and her patient. And she's like, well, how is he? Still batshit? Ha ha. They both laugh like, oh, my God. You catty bitches.
Basket case, man.
Yeah. Boys, noon really, really shit the bed on this positronic brain.
Like, enjoy to scan him, see if he's malfunctioning.
I finally met someone more neurotic than Barkley.
Oh, God.
Rikers, you mean broccoli?
Never did stop calling him that.
No. Riker, giant space bully.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one demerit on his otherwise spotless record as positive masculine role model. He's a bit of a bully.
All right, we're going to jump forward one full Stardate year to Stardate 2, I guess.
Oh, shit.
1 year later, Picard, Riker, and LaForge reminisce on the bridge of the Enterprise D. Geordi shuts down the ship so it can rest in his museum.
I did feel that. So, like, I have a unique relationship with Star Trek. Star Trek was my lifeline to sanity when I was in a deeply conservative, rural Christian part of my life. And I can't, my mom's biggest fucking failure is she allowed me to watch this show, which deliberately programmed me to be a compassionate, thoughtful human being. And to see that as an admirable quality in people. But like, I felt that when it's like, what would we be without her, speaking about the Enterprise, and is like different, but not better. And I'm like, yes, if I had not discovered Star Trek, I'd be a very different person and not better. And I thought that really resonated with me.
Yeah. And then that voice, when they say, I miss that voice, you even get the Majel Barrett.
Yep.
Gene Roddenberry's wife cameo here through that voice.
From beyond the grave.
Yeah.
Who gets paid? They didn't have any kids.
The estate? I don't know. Somebody legally owns that.
What the fuck does that even mean, the estate, if you don't have any progeny?
You'd have to ask someone richer than me, man.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Lawyers.
I don't have an estate. It's still, like I said, 1 year later. I assume Riker still hasn't gone home to his daughter. She's still there.
No, they're still planning a vacation.
Oh my God, you're right.
All right, they are. It's canon that they're just drunkenly carousing around all the holiday spots on why their kid sits at home with the poison rabbits, making poison rabbit pizza.
The Picard and Crusher family, the familial unit here, flies to space dock. Jack is nervous for his first day of school at Starfleet. He's going to be posted to the latest Enterprise, which is actually the rechristened Titan. It's Enterprise G.
On the accelerated track.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something they just keep in for all Crushers? If Crushers go through the door, it's like, hey, you're an important person. We'll put you on the 1 year to ensign track. And mm-hmm. you just go right to a ship.
Yeah, you go to advanced... orbital mechanics class, and then mm-hmm. straight into the Nausicaan pit.
Sure.
And then you go to the meditation chambers of Vulcan, and you're good.
You're good. Then you also have to do the one thing where you think there's a meltdown at Starfleet Academy, and you got to drag somebody mm-hmm. out of a room and let someone else die pinned between the equipment.
Yep.
Then you're ready for Starship.
At least one pass or fail in the Kobayashi Maru.
Yeah.
At least one.
One of your, you have to be, it's, yeah, no, I don't know. One more. You have to be in a stunt flying shuttlecraft cadet review program mm-hmm. and try to do some crazy death blossom routine that kills at least one of your crew members. And you have to have like a whole court-martial trial where you turn traitor against your unit. And Picard tells you it was the right thing to do. Narking was the right thing to do. Now you're ready.
One more. And you have to go from full sleep in one of Wesley's giant horrible sweaters to in uniform in under 14 seconds.
Yeah. It's like trying to get out of a net underwater. You just you have to fight it. You have to fight your way out.
Yeah. It's like the firefighter test where they have to strap on all their gear in a certain amount of time. Yeah. It's just like that, except out of the sweater. Anyway, I don't know how I feel about the Enterprise being like recycled as the Titan. I like the Titan. I'm just not sure I like it enough to become Enterprise.
It's not the first time it's happened, though. The 1701A was a recommissioned Constellation class. So, like, I always thought the Titan looked badass. I thought it's a sexy, sexy starship. It's the right size. It's the right disposition. It's got the right nacelle to saucer, the engineering deck ratio that's all important. And it looked good with the NCC 1701G. Like,
it
the
just
whole
didn't
plating.
Feel as momentous as like we've commissioned an entirely new type of ship. For an Enterprise, like this doesn't feel.
But they did that with F, and it was
like
fucked.
That. Yeah, no. Well, they didn't, right? It was like a Voyager type ship, wasn't it? Wasn't it the same class as the Voyager?
No, it was like that guppy looking thing that Shelby was on last episode.
Okay, it's like the Voyager and something else had a baby.
Yeah, but you're right. So. I wish they had an entirely different that everyone loved and thought was awesome. But barring that, rechristening the Titan, which is Riker's old ship too, there's like some kind of cool DNA there.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's like, in the family, you know.
Yeah, I agree. It's not the worst choice. It didn't feel like as big of a moment as I wanted it to, though.
Plus, the asset existed. It was free.
Very true. They already made it. So Jack pretends to be the captain on their shakedown cruise of the newly christened Enterprise G, but Seven busts him down a few ranks. Rafi is apparently the first officer on that ship, and Jack gets to be special counselor to the captain.
This is bullshit. Accelerated track, and you get to sit in this as special counselor as an ensign. Like, what does what does Crash think about this? She's the best Starfleet out of pilot, didn't go through the accelerated track, worked her way up from the bottom, also has a famous fucking first last name, thank you very fucking much. And she's sitting at helm 2 years into this thing?
And special counselor is like the cushiest position possible, right?
Yeah, like
you don't have any of the responsibility of making the actual decision. You just get to say, I think we should do this.
Exactly.
You don't have to push any buttons. You're not at risk here.
But I don't know. It does also make a lot of sense that Seven would want them as that because, like, I'm sure that appeals to her Ranger background, you know, the Fenris Ranger background, that he's been off in the hinterlands with his mom, running guns and medical supplies. And
but also, you don't want this fast track Nepo baby sitting at a mission critical station either, right?
Like, he's everyone on the ship has to hate him.
Uh huh. And imagine how much they would hate him if, like, he's fumbling his untrained fingers across the weapons console as they're trying to fight off Romulans or some shit.
Yeah. So I guess this is where he can do the least amount of damage. But, yeah. It seems bullshit.
Seven gets the opportunity to choose her captain's catchphrase, but we don't know what she chooses. Is there something in Voyager history that I don't know about that should tell me what she's about to say?
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, I wish this series continues to make me wish I was more familiar with Voyager.
It's wubba dubba wub wub or something. Yabba dabba.
I like to think she chose "Resistance is futile" as her catchphrase, as an ironic joke.
That would be fucking hilarious. Set course to the gamma system. Resistance is futile. You can't defy my orders. Yeah, I like it.
Or maybe just Neelix sucks. I don't know. Something.
True words never spoken.
All right, so we get to the denouement here with the Enterprise crew hanging out at the bar. The night comes to a close, but Picard gets one final toast. He chooses Shakespeare. And they decide not to call it a night, and instead play a game of poker, and Picard takes the pot. It's a lot of pots, but he takes the big one.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot. I mean, how hard is it to get Whoopi Goldberg out for an afternoon of filming? Because that would have really hit the spot.
Yeah.
Because I almost believed that when it's like Guinan's order side, I was like, if they had cut to just have Whoopi Goldberg kind of doing the Guinan side eye as she's pouring like the last bottle of blood wine and kind of tapping her wrist, that would have been fucking perfect. That would have hit the spot.
Right. Doing last call, and then they all just kind of laugh at her. Like,
and then she gets her fucking shotgun, her space gun out. It's like, I wasn't fucking kidding. Racks a phaser round into it, starts laying that. Worf's got to absorb blast with his body.
Jesus. Yeah, I guess, I don't know. Maybe she wanted too much money. Maybe she just wasn't available for an afternoon. Who knows?
And it's cool seeing Patrick Stewart, like one of his last lines, and he's quoting Shakespeare, you know, his royal Shakespeare guy.
As a Shakespearean actor.
It's cool. You
know, telling his crew to seize the opportunities as they come along.
The sail on the tides of fortune. And then he's like, and on that note, he whips out a card deck. And it's like, of course, they're going to play poker. Because that's another thing they're doing, honoring all good things. The character development that he did was like, you know what? I don't need to keep my closest advisors and confidants and my bridge crew at arm's length. I can let them into the inner circle. I can join them for their poker games.
Yeah.
And it's honoring that. And like I said, I think all this is just improvised. They might actually be drinking because Michael Dorn's line reading of "I just want to fold, okay?" seemed like
slam. Yeah.
It might not have even been in character.
Yeah, perhaps today is a good day to fold.
It's a fine day to fold with dishonor and slink to my quarters in shame. Yeah.
And then there's this one final post-credits sequence where we see Jack unpacking on the Titan, and Q appears to him and tells him that he has much ahead of him. Jack's trial is just beginning.
Yeah. Oh, the trial of humanity was over, but not your trial for humanity. And okay. Yeah.
And this is where I assume they're going to do a show with the Titan crew. Because why do this if not? Why not leave it in that,
like,
perfect moment at the poker table?
I read an interview like 3 weeks ago where it's like clear that the showrunners are hungry to do this. Like, I think it's called Star Trek Legacy. That's going to have like the remnants of all the crews from the other big series, and you know, just constant guests. I mean, that sounds like a lot of fun. If you have like, you got Seven of Nine, you got Geordi's kids, and you got Jack Crusher, and you got Rafi. That's a pretty good crew. And then you could just have like guest stars of the week. You get Michael Dorn back to do something with Rafi. You get Beverly stopping by to check on Jack. Like, I would probably watch a lot of seasons of that, assuming it's good or funny.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But that's it, man. That's it for Star Trek Picard.
Did we talk about this? Did they did actually get Alice Creege back for the voice of the Borg Queen, if not her body?
I can't remember if we talked about it in the podcast or before.
I know. I was excited to see that because I speculated last week, and she was the last very special guest star of the episode, lending her voice. She's got, I think she is the definitive Borg Queen. I love how silky smooth her voice is. It wouldn't have been beyond the pale to have her up there in the Borg Queen makeup, but I guess why. She's going to be buried under 70, because this woman, she's getting older, and you know, why bury under 70 pounds of latex to, when you just want her voice? But yeah, there might be continuing voyages with this crew. I would not be opposed.
We'll see.
Is that it? Are we done?
I think so.
We've got one more episode where we're going to crack open a mailbag, see what everybody thought of this season, maybe review some hilarious predictions. That were either failed or came true. Might be some internet points at stake. If you'd like to get on that, we're going to have a series wrap-up party next week, picard@ballboob.com. I do apologize for not getting to the feedback. It's just Picard was something I don't even know we could have done in this season without screeners, and it was always re-recording weeks in advance, and we always intended to like do some feedback, but like also we just talk so much about this show. We're going an hour 45 because... we fucking love it so much. So I hope you guys give us a pass on that, but we will crack that open next week for the series wrap up. Picard@baldmove.com is where you want to send that in. If you'd like to know what's next with Bald Move, I highly suggest subscribing to twitter.com/baldmove. Also, if you want to get everything that Bald Move does, because we do so many shows, we got like 70 different podcasts. You can subscribe to Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige, depending on whether you're looking for sci-fi, fantasy, fun, or more award-winning prestige drama. And we divide everything that Bald Move does into those two categories. So if you want to make sure you don't miss anything, right now we're doing Yellow Jackets, a great little puzzle box show on Showtime. We're also covering The Mandalorian, which is a lot of fun, over on Disney Plus. We'll be doing the new season of Foundation. We're going to be doing the second season of Severance. There's a lot of really cool shows. Going to be checking out Mrs. Davis in a couple weeks over on our premium podcast. A lot of stuff coming up for Bald Move. You can follow it all at twitter.com/baldmove. And of course, if you've been tagging along with us for a while, if you've been on a long voyage with us, and you want to make sure that there are dilithium crystal stays matricized, it doesn't dematrices, it doesn't decrystallize. That's what it is. That's the term. You can't have your dilithium crystal decrystallize. How are you going to tune the matter antimatter beam before it goes into the reaction core if you don't have your dilithium crystals crystallized? That's at stake with support.baldmove.com. We are constantly on the verge of decrystallization. And our nacelles is falling off. Falling off. We don't have the special grease monkey bay where you can just reattach them, lickety smith. They fall off and it's done. It's done
your
for
dilithium
us.
Dilithium leaks out your deflector dish. It's a bad look.
And every bad other look. Week we got a Rolaran equivalent trying to fly a shuttlecraft into it. It's a shit show. It's honestly a shit show. We could use your help at support.baldmove.com. And it's not just keeping us flying until you get a lot of extra stuff, bonus audio content, bonus video content, ad free feeds. It's a hoot. Support.baldmove.com. Thank you for listening to us all season long. We'll be back for a final wrap up episode next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.